Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Hadar Shalimi, a singer-songwriter who has recorded an excellent album of classic songs from the Great American Songbook by Jewish composers and lyricists. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Shinshinim, our young representatives of Israel, Shai Friedwald and Danielle Levy, and our Mevina on Israel, Imbal Shtivi. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving weekend. It's a great holiday, really, and definitely a Jewish one. As I told my congregation, Beit Simcha, a festival where you invite over all your family, even those you don't agree with, and overeat, that is surely a Jewish holiday. At this season of gratitude, a few thoughts about Thanksgiving to start this morning on Too Jewish. My friends, in our society, we are supposed to say thank you all the time, and any kind of thanking pretty quickly becomes routine. Get a gift, write a thank you note, or send a thank you email or text. Waitress brings you your meal or fills your water glass, gets you a napkin, you say thank you. Somebody moves their chair for you, it says Gesundheit when you sneeze, or tells you where the bathroom is, you say thank you. It's frequent, ordinary, banal. Gratitude is just good form. It means about as much as answering fine when somebody asks, how are you? For most of us, saying thanks is a reflex, an automatic, autonomic social response, a smile that never reaches the eyes. It's amazingly easy to turn a basic human emotion, gratitude, into a meaningless ritual. But there's something troubling about that, for giving thanks is far from an ordinary or natural process. One of the important things that separates human beings from other animal species is our ability to say thanks, even for the basic necessities of life. Animals may feel grateful for their next meal, but they are much too busy devouring it to pay homage to whatever brought it to their mouth. But humans have both the capacity to eat, of course, and to express thanks for that fact. The rationale for saying grace before meals in the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim faiths is based on a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 5, Ve'achalta ve'savata uverachta, you shall eat and be satisfied and bless your God. In other words, for the good basic sustenance you're getting, offer thanks to the one who created it and who created you. The rabbis of the Talmud believed that this biblical sentence taught a great deal more than that. The most basic biological act, eating food, something we do 3 times a day, some of us much more than that, needed to be raised to the level of sanctification and holiness. According to Jewish tradition, the tables on which we eat are spiritually transformed into altars for worshiping God by saying blessings of thanks before and after every meal. We are to make every meal a time of deep gratitude to the one who supplies our needs. That's a little hard to do. It's a noble idea, sanctifying even the most routine parts of our lives, but it requires a level of consciousness most of us don't choose to maintain. Gratitude is such a strange, changeable thing. Many times we try to thank someone in a way that'll matter, only to find that our Thanksgiving offering misses its target. Other times we may feel profoundly grateful, but allow ourselves to be so busy we just don't get around to showing it. For some of us, it's difficult even to say thank you for what people do for us. It means accepting that we are worthy of somebody else's kindness and generosity, that we deserve to be taken care of or loved. A casual thank you is easy, but meaningless. Effective thanksgiving and thanks receiving requires thought, care. Leave aside for a moment the question of how we manage to thank those most difficult of God's creations, other human beings. Let's talk a little about what it means to give thanks directly to God. How about you? Do you ever thank God? If so, when do you most feel like offering psalms of praise or of gratitude to God? I guess I feel it most profoundly when I experience spectacular beauty in nature, a great sunset, an early morning walk or ride along a misty beach. It's a time when my heart opens up. I'm exalted by a deep and profound sense of connection to the source of all life and beauty. That's a little heavy for a morning radio show, perhaps, but still a wonderful thing to think about on this post-Thanksgiving morning. What can we give thanks for right now, today, this Sunday? For life, for health, for our families, however they are constructed, however dysfunctional, for our friends, even for our ability to listen to this Two Jewish radio show. On this Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, we thank God, then, not for great gifts, waterfalls, financial windfalls, promotions, wins in football or basketball, not even for new births. I suggest that we give gratitude for the simple blessings that keep us alive and sustain us, allow us to experience this miraculous world in all its precious, sacred beauty. The ordinary miracles that keep us going. Well, maybe those are miracle enough and reason to give thanks. To play us in this morning, here's a version of Mode Ani, prayer and statement of gratitude to God, as sung by Tzemed Lemed. The words are by Avi Ochin, melody by Asaf Truya.
Mode Ani kol boker shechzarta et nishmati, Mode Ani el beged shenachta al gufi, shelo yehye li kar, ata shomer alai. Mode Ani kol boker al haor, al etzem hayoti, Mode Ani al lechem shenachta al shulchani, shelo yehye raev. Shelo edakem Lens for fiuchai modani Al kol kishlotai Ve'al kol shirai Et kulam makdish lecha Dalecha, dalecha Shemodani lecha
That was Tzemed Lemed singing Mode Ani, a prayer of thanks and gratitude to God. Our guest this morning is singer-songwriter Hadar Oshalimi, who has recorded a wonderful album of songs by Jewish composers and lyricists from the golden age of the classic American songbook. Meet her and hear why and how this Israeli-American made this lovely recording when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua Yaqui Tribe.
To welcome our guest, Hadar Oshalimi, here's a play-in from a song from her new album, It Never Was You. It's the title track.
But it never was you. It never was anywhere you. An occasional sunset reminded me, or a flower hanging high on a tulip tree, or
we are delighted to welcome the two Jewish, our guests this morning. Hadar Arshalimi has just recorded a really delightful album of jazz standards by, I should say, Jewish composers and lyricists primarily, called It Never Was You. She's a singer, performer, songwriter based in New York. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I should also say kind of an American Israeli. That'd be a fair assessment, no?
It's more like Israeli American. I grew up, I was raised and lived in Tel Aviv until I came to the U.S. For college. So mom's American, dad's Iranian, and I grew up in Tel Aviv.
And you were on Kochav Nolad.
I was on Kochav Nolad, yes.
The very first season, actually. This is like history in Israel.
So true.
tell us about your decision to record this album, because you do a lot of original stuff. These are covers, obviously, and what motivated you, and a little bit about what went into it.
Yeah, so that's absolutely true. I usually record original music, but I had the privilege of performing in some receptions for some ex-presidents, Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, and a few others. And when I was sort of invited to perform in these receptions, I was thinking, you know, what music would be appropriate for this kind of an event? And the first thing that came to mind was, how about we do some jazz standards? And so I started researching and kind of put together the set list. And as I was going through the real book, which is the book of all the jazz standards, I just kept seeing, you know, oh, Hammerstein, oh, Gershwin, oh, these are all Jewish composers. And it just kept coming, like every other song was a Jewish composer. And, you know, maybe it's common knowledge to some people, but it wasn't to me.
Well, if you grew up in Tel Aviv, it might not be. If you grew up with the history of Tin Pan Alley, you might have known a few of those guys were Jewish.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it could also be my age, perhaps. But at any rate, I started just researching it a little bit, and I discovered that, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, even 50s, the majority of the composers, let's say aside from Cole Porter, were Jewish composers. And they dominated this industry that is what we think of, you know, American music today, not only jazz, but just influenced the continuance of compositions of music in this country. And I just, you know, as a Jewish composer myself, I really wanted to kind of shine a light on these composers and this history that maybe is not, you know, so familiar to everyone. And so I decided I wanted to record an album. And I kind of, you know, thought to myself, I live in New York. I have all these incredible Israeli and Jewish jazz musicians that live here in the city. What if I just got us all together into the studio? We chose, you know, our favorite 10 songs that we all kind of found our own stories in, and recorded an album. So it really was just a passion project idea that I actually came up with when I was on the flight to visit my family for Passover. So I was thinking about it then.
So it was born over Pesach.
By
the way, it makes a great Hanukkah gift, I have to say.
Thank you so much. And executed before Memorial Day. So,
pretty quick work.
That is how quickly we did it. Yes.
Yeah.
We will talk much more with Hadar Arshalimi. We'll hear some of her music when we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vital community, vibrantly striving every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to all throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha is located at 7315 North Oracle Road, just north of Ina on the west side of Oracle. Services, classes, and events are open to all. Join us this Friday night, 7315 North Oracle Road. Shabbat evening services are at 6:30 p.m. Tot Kabbalat Shabbat services for families with young children are at 5:30 p.m. with song and story and, of course, snacks. Saturday morning Torah study with bagels and lox is at 9 o'clock, followed by Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Join us this Sabbath, 7315 North Oracle Road at Beit Simcha on the west side of Oracle, north of Ina. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses, including a Hebrew high-speed class this coming Saturday and Sunday. And of course, to come to any and all of our services, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, www.BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, at the fastest-growing Jewish synagogue in all of southern Arizona during its exciting beginning times. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people, an individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort? As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to KohanAward.com, KohanAward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is KohanAward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or ekvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been covering the Jews of the Balkans, really a fascinating, complicated community, and we came up really to the eve of the Shoah, the Holocaust, community made up of, well, primarily Sephardic, also Ashkenazic, some ancient Roman, as they're called, Jewish communities, some Venetian Jews, really a complex and interesting mix. As these independent nations formed out of the end of World War II, the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, end of World War I, sorry, the Ottoman Empire, and really the collapse as well of the Austro-Hungarian Habsburg Empire, these countries had Jewish populations, Jewish minorities that were pretty well established within the countries. Things got horrible pretty quickly when the Nazis moved in. Let's talk about sort of how World War II played out in the Balkans.
Right. So a bunch of new nations were created as the multinational Austro-Hungarian Empire and the equally multinational Ottoman Empire were dismantled by the many peace treaties that followed World War I. So Jews in all these places were in a transition. And by the way, I should mention that places in the U.S. that have large Sephardic communities, people can directly trace their lineage to Thessaloniki or the Isle of Rhodes or Izmir or places that most of your listeners have never heard of, like Bitola, which is in modern Macedonia, or Sarajevo, which is the capital of Bosnia. The Jews in these places faced multiple challenges. Generally speaking, their non-Jewish neighbors were not anti-Semitic and had no reason to be. But when the Nazi threat loomed large and then became very real and very immediate, the non-Jewish populations had different responses. And the myth that's prevalent in the space that used to be Yugoslavia, which is at the heart of all this business, is that the Croatians were called Ustashi and they became very fast and loyal partners to the Nazis, that they welcomed the Nazis with open arms, and only the Serbs, who were called the Chetnici, and were loyal to the king, really fought hard against the Nazis. And the Croatians were happy to round up their Jews, according to this myth, and ship them off to camps in the same way that the French were. Obviously, this is an oversimplification, but it's what a lot of people in the Balkans believe. It colors Jewish community life in the Balkans even today. Tito, when he chose partisans to fight against the Nazis in the forests, very often chose Jews. So there were groups, like Jewish youth groups, HaShomer HaTzair, for example, which
Zionist youth group,
right, carried out guerrilla actions against the Nazis. And it's yet another reason that Tito always considered the Jews to be the only true Yugoslavs. And several of his closest advisors,
he might have been right, actually, about that, ultimately.
And he himself, although he gave Serbia a preeminent role in the federation that eventually became the Federation of Yugoslavia, he was not. He was a Croatian, and Tito was a nickname. His real name was Josip Broz. And Tito was a nickname that was given to him by his colleagues during the war because he was very laconic in his communications. He would say frequently, "Ti-ta," which means "you," and he'd point his finger, "take care of this," and he'd point his finger at something else. But instead of a full sentence, it was just "Ti-ta," and he said that so often that that became his name.
Seems like this history, you said a couple of sessions ago what Churchill said, the Balkans produce far more history than they can consume. It seems that's pretty true of the Jewish communities there too.
Right, and in some senses it's still true of the Balkans as a whole.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome in Bosch TV, our Mivina on Israel, the Shlicha for the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov.
Boker O. Thank you for having me.
Let's move to a topic we haven't talked about enough, which is music, Israeli musicians, and there's a great one coming, David Broza.
Yeah, David Broza is coming to town. I understand that he was here before, but there is probably a reason why they keep calling him back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's one of the great guitarists in the world, a wonderful performer, a good singer, excellent combination of Spanish music, Israeli music, world music.
Yeah. No, he's been around for a while and he knows... He's a great, great performer. He will come to the Fox Tucson Theater on December 21st. It's a Saturday night.
Just the night before Hanukkah begins.
The night before Hanukkah, he will bring some light to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's 7:30 at the Fox Tucson Theater. And he's coming with a band of... Latin rhythm.
He's famous for doing all kinds of crossover music. He's worked with Palestinian musicians. He's worked to kind of create music as a bridge to peace.
Definitely.
Now he's kind of deep into the Latin music sound in combination with his own Israeli sound. It's really spectacular stuff.
Yeah, it should be spectacular. He's touring this. He will be on a tour. He already is on a tour, and he will be
coming here.
Yeah, probably
an international tour. David.
Yeah. So he'll be coming here as well with his band. And we are collaborating on this. The Weintraub Israel Center is collaborating with the Fox in bringing him over. So I'll just say that if you're interested in David Broza, whirlwind fingers on the guitar.
Really one of the greatest guitarists I've ever heard.
One of the greatest guitarists. Latin
music. And I might add a several time guest of Two Jewish will be on the show next week, so you can hear him again.
Oh, great. I'm happy. Yeah, so for sure I'll listen to the interview. He also has this interesting project with bridging I don't know how to say it. It's called 1 Million Guitar. It's an interesting project that he does using music to educate kids or helping disadvantaged kids.
Get access to music and learn music. Yeah, absolutely.
Very interesting person, very interesting musician, an Israeli coming to Tucson. We have a discount. It's important for me to tell everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That
why would a Jew ever be interested in a discount? How can you even say that? No, go ahead.
No, it's really it's so
if you go to the Weintraub Israel Center website, you can find out about David Broza. And if you have a group, there's a group discounts as well.
Yes, for groups over 10 people, we're offered a 20% discount. So all you need to do is actually email the Weintraub Israel Center. All the information is on Jewish Tucson and the website. Right. And so just email the details so we can hook you up with the box office and they and make sure that you get the discount.
You'll get better seats at a better price. So great
exactly.
way to do it.
Exactly.
Thanks so much, Inval. We
Thank
will talk
you.
Next week.
Thank
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
Our guest this morning, Hadar Arshalimi, has recorded some of the greatest songs in all of American history. All composed by Jews, often with lyrics by Jews. This one's a song by Kurt Weill, the fantastic German-Jewish composer, the son of a cantor, a chazan. It's the incomparable September Song.
But it's a long, long one from May to December, and the days grow short when you reach September. The autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, and I haven't got time for the waiting game.
That was September's song, sung by our guest, Hadar Arshalimi. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morty is a successful businessman, and his daughter, his only beloved child, apple of his eye, marries a nice young man. Morty decides to give his daughter and son-in-law a magnificent wedding present, so he makes the young man a full partner in his business. On the first day after the kids return from the honeymoon, he invites his newly minted son-in-law to come to the office, and they sit down together. "You know, son, partner, I'd like to get you started learning the business, so how about you start today in the loading dock?" But the son-in-law is not impressed. "No, Pop, I don't want that job." "Okay, partner," says Morty, "that's a little too humble for you, I understand. How about you start in the mailroom?" "No, Pop, I don't want that job," his son-in-law replies. "I see," says Morty. "Well then, partner, I suppose I could start you in accounting." Again, his son-in-law says, "No, Pop, I don't want that job." "Aha," says Morty. "You have a strong opinion of yourself, partner. That's good. How about if I make you a junior executive?" But still his son-in-law answers, "No, Pop, I don't want that job." Morty's getting a little perturbed by now, but it is his daughter's new husband, after all. "Okay, you drive a hard bargain, partner. I'll make you a senior executive." "One more time," the answer is, "No, Pop, I don't want that job." "Look here, partner," says Morty. "You want to be the boss? That's my job, but okay, fine. You can be the boss." Without hesitation, his son-in-law answers, "No, Pop, I don't want that job either." Morty is now at the end of his rope. "No? Really? Even that job you turned down? My job? So tell me, partner, just what do you want me to do with you?" And the son-in-law replies, "Buy me out." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. The urge to journey into the unknown is a major motivation in Torah. We saw it with Abraham a few weeks ago. We find it in the lives of most of our ancestors, and we encounter it perhaps most powerfully in the story of this week's great Torah portion, Vayetze. At the start of the tale, Jacob is fleeing from his brother Esau's potential revenge for cheating him out of both birthright and blessing. He leaves family and home, both of which are in Beersheba and Canaan, and journeys towards Haran, Abraham's adopted hometown. Haran is located just north of the current Syrian border in eastern Turkey, near Şanlıurfa, between the Tigris and Euphrates River, in the cradle of all civilization. I visited the area of Haran during my sabbatical trip a few years ago. It was filled with refugees from the Syrian civil war then. 3,700 years ago, when Jacob headed to Haran, it was an important city-state in ancient Syria, and Abraham's kin still lived there. But first, in Vayetze, Jacob has to get to Haran, and he is ill-prepared for the journey. He has nothing with him at all, not even a bedroll. At night, he is forced to lay his head on a rock to sleep.
In this state of extremis, God brings Jacob a promise in the form of a famous dream, a ladder ascending to heaven with angels going up and coming down, a pledge of family and land and ultimate safety and security. Jacob, our forefather, wakes from this dream and says pointedly, "Hey, God was in this place and I didn't know it." That's something all of us can say from time to time, no? For God is in every place, and often we don't realize it. Here in Vayetse, God's exclamation provides us with an incredible message of awareness from the true father of our people. But there's another important message in Vayetse. It is that Jacob must leave everything familiar in order to allow him to find God's presence. Throughout human history, religions have been founded by individuals who left ordinary lives and places and wandered off into the wilderness, usually the desert. Abraham, Jacob, and Moses are the most obvious Jewish pioneers. Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad fit the same pattern. In order to become whom we seek to be spiritually, we must begin by leaving what we already know. And then, when we encounter God in the wilderness, we learn God was back there at home, too. We just weren't yet ready to notice that fact. Of all the major figures in Genesis, Jacob might be the most interesting. He's complicated, clever, tricky, bold, resourceful, and he has a rather spectacularly complex love life, all of which takes off in this week's Torah portion. But it's that moment when he realizes how little he really knows that makes him most human and most like us. And it's his journey into the wilderness alone with nothing that helps us understand spirituality is not usually found by doing what is most comfortable. Often we too struggle to figure out where we can find God. If we are lucky and aware, we come to realize that God is in this place, indeed, in every place. All we have to do is go out into the wilderness for a bit, open our eyes, and accept that fact. Our guest this morning, Hadar Arshalimi, is an Israeli-American with a flair for the classic American songbook, and she has made an album of compositions by Jewish composers and lyricists of some of the greatest songs of all. Hear all about it when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In Israel, thousands did rally in support of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and against his indictment on three corruption charges. The crowd outside the Tel Aviv Museum of Art was estimated between 5,000 and 8,000, but Netanyahu tweeted 15,000 thank yous after the rally, inflating the size of the gathering unless he meant to give two thank yous to every person there. It was a sizable rally, but in Israel, that's actually not a great turnout. Political rallies are often many, many times that size. Demonstrators carried signs reading, "You will never walk alone," and "We will not keep quiet while Netanyahu's blood is being spilled." Other signs accused Israeli prosecutors of blackmail and threats. Israeli Attorney General Avichai Mandelblit last week announced his decision to indict Netanyahu for bribery and breach of trust in three corruption investigations against him. Very few senior Likud party officials attended Netanyahu's rally. Among those who did were Culture Minister Miri Regev and lawmaker Miki Zohar. Regev said the rally was to send a message that the rule of law isn't above the law. "The essence of democracy is checks and balances. It seems that some are pushing too hard. We must stop them." The Likud party brought buses of supporters from around the country to support Netanyahu. In other news, lest you think we are a little paranoid about the rise of anti-Semitism right here in the good old U.S. of A., last week a Florida pastor named Rick Wiles, who is known for his anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, said in his weekly broadcast that the effort to impeach President Donald Trump is a Jew coup. Wiles also said on his True News YouTube channel that Jews will kill millions of Christians. His fundamentalist Christian platform regularly releases anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, and homophobic videos. Representatives of True News have attended White House news conferences back when the Trump White House used to have press conferences, and they've been called on to ask questions of President Trump. YouTube banned the True News channel following Wiles' rant last week. He ranted on what he calls his Godcast. That's the way the Jews work. They are deceivers. They plot. They lie. They do whatever they have to do to accomplish their political agenda. This is a coup led by Jews to overthrow the constitutionally elected president of the United States, and it's beyond removing Donald Trump. It's removing you and me. That's what's at the heart of it, Wiles said. I'm going to tell you, Church of Jesus Christ, you're next. Get it through your head. They're coming for you. There will be a purge. That's the next thing that happens when Jews take over a country. They kill millions of Christians. You know, funny he should say that. The only people that I've ever heard of that kill millions of humans in recent centuries have been Christians killing millions of Jews, not the other way around. You remember Pastor Wiles. It's called the Holocaust. It's factual. It really happened in this world, unlike the preposterous evil bile that you spew. Disgusting, a friend of mine called him. Indeed, Wiles, and this venom is disgusting. Made all the worse because it comes from a man who claims to speak for and about God. Nothing could be further from the truth. If anti-Semitism is a rising problem in America, and it is, it's something much more sinister and more prevalent in England and throughout the United Kingdom, and perhaps especially the Labour Party. A Jewish candidate for Britain's Labour Party says she's being bombarded with death threats. Nearly half of them are anti-Semitic. Ruth Smith, Member of Parliament from Stoke-on-Trent, said that she's afraid to leave her home due to the constant threats. When she does leave, she carries a panic button in case she's attacked. Smith does not go anywhere alone, has not ridden public transport in 18 months. The death threats come from both the far left and the far right. Nice. Last week, after months of the threats by email and social media, Smith said a death threat in the form of an essay describing how the author wanted to kill her was hand-delivered to her constituency office, which led her to go public about the threats. I just feel like I need to put down a marker to say this is not normal or acceptable. I won't be bullied by anyone, said the Member of Parliament. We need to find a way back to respectfully disagreeing with each other, not threatening to hurt each other. Smith received anti-Semitic death threats during the campaign in her successful 2015 election, more in 2016, that required police protection and surveillance cameras in her home. Smith has represented her constituency in Staffordshire since 2015. The next British general election is coming up December 12th, and that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. To welcome back our guest, here's a little of her version of Come Rain or Come Shine by the great Jewish composer Harold Arlen, who composed the music for The Wizard of Oz, by the way. The words are by Johnny Mercer.
I'm gonna love you like nobody's loved you, come rain. Like nobody's loved me, come rain or come shine. Happy together, unhappy together.
We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Hadar Oshalimi, is an Israeli-American singer and songwriter who has recorded a wonderful album of jazz standards, It Never Was You, by Jewish composers and lyricists. And we were talking about the origin of the whole project and all the great jazz musicians, of course, in New York. Many of them are Israeli, as you noted, and Jewish as well. How did you, besides everybody got together and said, oh, these are all great songs, tell us about, you know, obviously you have to feel those songs. They have to speak to you and match your own style. Tell us about the songs themselves, how you chose them, and maybe a little bit about the composers.
Yeah, absolutely. So my mother is American, which is what makes me half American. And I told her I wanted to do this project. And she was so excited that she literally sent me probably 50 songs to listen to. And my piano player, Yaniv Taubenhaus, who also helped, or he arranged and he helped co-produce the album as well, he sent some songs as well. And so we had this giant list of songs that we all listened to. And I kind of listened to the lyrics, listened to the melodies, wanted to have a diverse album that not only highlighted the different composers, which are on the album, we have Hammerstein and Gershwin and Weill and Kern and Hart, to name a few, and many, many more. So I wanted different composers. I wanted sort of different storylines, different kind of like tonal components, different arrangements. So all of those kind of came in together in deciding on the 10 songs that we decided to go with. The more I kind of did my research, I mean, I chose them because I really truly fell in love with them. I chose, you know, if I could have had an album of 30 songs, I probably would have recorded 30 songs. But I really did listen to about 60 songs and chose, in my opinion, the most beautiful ones that kind of highlighted my vocal ability with lyrics where I found my own story in, with melodies that I knew the musicians were going to just, you know, bring, kind of introduce in a new arrangement and kind of bring a new life to, and highlighting the very specific composers that the stories, you know, their stories that I read about them also made me fall in love with them and the songs even more. So that's kind of how, that's a long answer to your question.
Sure. That's a good answer. Look, some of the, I Got Rhythm, Gershwin. Okay. Some of this must've been pretty clear. What was the most surprising song that you added? What was the one you didn't really expect to add?
So actually the title track of the album, It Never Was You. Every time people look, at the songs that I chose, you know, I've done a little bit of kind of PR for the album before I officially release it December 3rd. Everybody's like, oh, I know all these songs, but what's it? What is It Never Was You? And that song is probably one of the less familiar songs on the album. And of course, you know, it was written by Kurt Weill. And
by the way, his father was a Chazan. Kurt Weill's father was a cantor. He's a great story and incredible composer. I love Kurt Weill. Of the songs, were any of them difficult for you to find an interpretation? I mean, look, you know, these are all songs that have been recorded by many great artists, right? So, you know, do I want to sing it the way Frank Sinatra sang it? Do I want to sing, you know, I mean, obviously there's such a wide range of ways you can do something.
It's really actually an interesting question. I want to say yes to all and no to all. Yes, because I didn't really grow up on this music. I grew up in Motown, actually, even though I grew up in Tel Aviv because my mother's from Detroit. But, and of course, Israeli music and, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I know, so random. Motown and Israeli music. But I didn't really grow up on jazz standards, except for maybe a couple where I used to kind of sit on the piano and play by ear. But for the most part, this was kind of a new art form that I was introduced to when I went to college in Israel, to Limon School of Music, which is a Berklee College of Music extension right outside of Tel Aviv. So I was introduced to it there, but never really, really practiced it. And I really, you know, as I'm a seasoned musician, I've been working as a full-time musician for the past 13 years, and I kind of rediscovered this music when I was preparing for these receptions for the ex-presidents. So I knew this wasn't necessarily my comfort zone, but I was really excited by that because I wanted to challenge myself with something that, you know, was a little bit different. And the natural timbre of my voice is deep and soulful. So, you know, I'm listening to these unbelievable Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan.
It does sound like your voice was made for these, to be honest. It really does.
Oh, thank you. It's. I mean, once I heard it that way, it was kind of like, man, I should have done this a while ago. But, you know, originally it didn't feel as natural. So I don't want to say I struggled. I didn't struggle, but I certainly worked really, really hard leading up to the recording. probably harder than I have on any song I've ever gone into the studio to record. So yeah, they were challenging, but incredibly fulfilling. And I'm really proud of this project.
Yeah, you should be. It's really delightful.
Thank you.
One song surprised me. Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most.
Yes.
Tell us about that and how you chose that.
Ooh, so that is an incredibly difficult song to sing, actually. It bounces between different keys, there's a few different modulations there. I don't want to get too technical,
but it definitely modulates. Yeah. It's got kind of different tempos. I mean, it's really complicated, little piece.
It's really complicated. I love the song, but actually the main reason I chose this song is because it was one of the only songs composed by a female composer, or written. I'm sorry, right. The lyrics were written by a female composer. I read a little bit about her.
Lanzmann, right? Isn't her name?
Fran Lanzmann, exactly. I read a little bit about her. She had a very interesting career. I wonder if she would have had a more interesting career had she been male. Because out of all of these composers and lyricists, there's her, and then there's Betty Comden.
Yeah, and Comden, of course, was married to Adolph Green, and so, you know, they were a team, and that probably helped, actually.
Helped her, and it seems like even, from what I was reading a little bit, even within their team, he kind of was a little bit more prominent. But so I chose that song because it was very challenging. I loved the lyrics. Just, you know, kind of feeling it talks about how you yourself kind of change throughout the seasons, but in a more like, it's kind of a metaphor to life and to a relationship, and I really found myself in these lyrics, and then I learned that this composer was a female composer, and I just really wanted to honor her, and show a little bit of that side of this industry that, you know, doesn't really get shown all that often. All yeah.
Right. So, terrible question. What's your favorite cut on the album?
Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. Well, that one and Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. The first and the last song on the album, two totally different deliveries, two totally different compositions, and two totally different arrangements. I love them both equally for different reasons. Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. I felt I just kind of opened my mouth and all this sound came out. We recorded it in, I want to say, two takes live.
Wow.
Actually, yes. Well, this isn't tooting my own horn. This is my musicians. They're just unbelievably
talented. Well, they were
tooting
their horn, so it's okay.
Yeah, so exactly. Sam Sedergursky on sax was tooting his horn. We recorded it, recorded the whole album live. In fact, we recorded the whole album in one day. I sang for probably 10 hours, and I was so fulfilled by the music that I could have probably sang for another 10. And everything was recorded live. All the instruments were in their own isolation booths, and we recorded it simultaneously. I believe we did that one in about, I think it was two takes.
Wow.
The last song, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, it's just me and vocals. It was the last song of the evening. Everybody left except for myself and Yaniv on piano. And it just wasn't working. I was kind of belting it out, and just the lyrics are so sad, and it wasn't working. And my engineer, Robert L. Smith, who was engineering the whole day and did the mixing and the mastering of the album, at some point he didn't say anything the whole day. Every time I'd say, you know, how's it sounding, Robert? Sounds great. Sounds like an album. But he didn't really give too much feedback. And so you don't know. Is it sounding good?
Is it really good?
You have no idea. Yeah, you have no idea. And after maybe five takes of Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, he comes into my headphones and he's like, Hadar, let's dim the lights. You know, it sounds like you're singing, I'm sorry, to a room full of people. The song should be sung to one person.
Yeah.
And I thought about it, and that was all I needed. And then we did it in one take. And it's just really intimate and kind of brings you in. And it's heartfelt for me when I listen to it. So those are my two favorite songs.
All right. So I want a bonus track. What didn't you include on the album that you really wanted to include, but you didn't have room?
Well, there was one that wasn't by a Jewish composer. So that was the main reason why it didn't make it to the album.
Didn't make the cut, so to speak, but never
mind.
Yeah,
didn't make that
cut. We can leave off the Briss jokes. Okay. So,
oh my goodness. I didn't even go there. That's
perfect. Sorry. Apologize.
One of the songs I wanted to do was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, because it's obviously
Jewish composer.
there's no words behind to express why you want to do that song. And the reason I chose not to do it in the end was because I felt like it maybe is one of those songs that has just been a little too overdone. And I actually sang it at my bat mitzvah in Israel instead
of Tel Aviv.
Yes, I did. On the piano, I just accompanied myself and sang it. I remember I took my shoes off so I could. I was wearing heels and I could barely stand on them at 12 years old. So, that was one of the reasons. It was kind of like a Girat Ma'agal, like closing the circle. I don't know how to say it in English. I wanted to complete
the circle.
Thank you. Complete the circle. But you got a little bit of my ESL Hadarism in your interview. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to do it. And of course, I just love the song. But I said, you know, there's other songs that just haven't been as exposed as that one, or haven't been recorded as many times as that one, and so I ended up. It was a heartache, but I ended up deciding not to put it on the album. I think my mom was pretty annoyed.
You could sing a little of it for us now.
I could. All right, so I'm not warmed up, and it's freezing in New York. But here it goes. Somewhere over the rainbow. Way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. If the little pretty bluebirds fly above the rainbow, why, oh, why can't I?
Oh, I hope I sing like that when I'm not warmed up.
Thank you.
Hadar, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was wonderful. It's a great pleasure.
By the way, I did a parody of that once for Purim, Somewhere Over Mount Sinai. Yeah.
Is it online? Can I find it?
Over Mount Sinai. The rest of it didn't get any better. But
Hadar, thank you so much. Where can people go to find out more about you and to get your album?
So it will officially be released December 3rd. Until then, it's in my head and on my computer. December 3rd, it will be on all music platforms, Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, under Hadar or Shalimi. One more time, Hadar or Shalimi. You can always contact me for a hard copy release on any of those platforms as well, on Facebook, Hadar or Shalimi, on Instagram, Hadar or Shalimi, and any other place online. It will be available then.
And again, a great Hanukkah gift. Thank you so much.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out from Hadar.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be the great David Broza, guitarist, Israeli, and world music star. Our playout this morning comes from whom else? Hadar or Shalimi. This week's guest, it's called Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Once I was a sentimental thing. Threw my heart away each spring.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.